All right, so we're picking up on page 74, and we are going to start in that table, table 5.2, probably repeating, but the disorders caused by pathogens. You know, they've got the Zika virus in there. They have tinea that we talked about. Tinea was the ringworm. And it talked about all the different kinds of tinea, tinea pedis, tinea capitis, and then saying that ringworm's not caused by a worm, and it's not a lesion, or always ring-shaped either, okay? The lesion is not always ring-shaped. It is a lesion, but anyway. Then they talk about, and that's under fungi, so it's a fungus, and protozoa, and then they talk about worms. They have the hookworm on here. They're larval worms that burrow their way through the skin of a barefoot, migrate to the intestine, and hook on the intestinal wall. I know.
I keep thinking about worms in general.
I know. And these worms feed on the blood of the host, causing anemia. So they're causing you to have a low blood count, fatigue, and wasting, just wasting away. Then we have pinworms. They're the most common worm infestation in the United States. And then we have the tapeworms. We had discussed that. That was, I think, was number 6 on your anticipation guide when we were going through that. Now, before on page 72, and it goes over to page 74, it starts at the bottom of that reading. It says, Dr. Semmelweis concluded that puerperal fever is caused by conveyance to the pregnant woman of putrid particles derived from living organisms through the agency of the examining fingers. So what are we talking about in here? What's he talking about? Dr. Semmelweis, wash those mitts. What is it talking about here?
What
disease are we talking about here? When the title is Dr. Semmelweis screams, wash those mitts. What is he talking about? He's trying to make a little funny story out of it.
Yeah.
Kind of. In the first paragraph.
Yeah.
What disease are we talking about here? Purpural fever. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's talking about.
I thought you were asking for something else. I was like,
no, what disease are we talking about? It's okay. Wash those mitts. They call it childbirth fever. They were saying that it was because they their fingers were dirty. And okay. So, yes.
Oh, okay.
Okay? So that's why that was caused. Okay? All right. These are all funny little things. You got Flora and her vaginal itch, okay? So Flora, you know, we got the normal flora in our body. That's why it's putting things on there. So anyway, it says the yeast called Candida albicans is present in small numbers within the vagina. So the presence of normal flora within the vagina. Normal flora in the vagina prevents the overgrowth of yeast. Okay, so you got a certain amount of bacteria and a certain amount of yeast.
So if someone's lacking flora, is that why they get a yeast infection?
If they take too many bacteria away, then the yeast will take over, and that's how they could get a yeast infection. So yes, if you're on antibiotics and it kills too much bacteria, the yeast will take over.
Okay.
So right here it says, if the normal flora is destroyed by an antibiotic, just like what you said, the yeast grows uncontrollably and causes candidiasis, which is a vaginal yeast infection characterized by discharge, odor, and itching. Now we're going to learn about Rick, Nick, and the sick tick. What disease do you think we're talking about here?
The Rocky Mountain Fever.
Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, yes. RMSF. And what is that treated with? What do they treat Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever with?
Antibiotics.
It's antibiotics, but there's a certain one. Tetracycline.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. The tick is an arthropod vector for Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever. Remember us talking about arthropods and vectors? Okay. It's not killed by the rickettsia. Mama tick coexists with the rickettsia and passes the rickettsia through her eggs to her baby ticks, thereby perpetuating and expanding generations of sick ticks. Yay. So over on why Typhoid Mary needs to lose her gallbladder. We are talking about typhoid fever here. It says carriers of typhoid fever never rid their system of salmonella. Instead, they harbor the organisms in the bile that's stored within the gallbladder. Salmonella-laden bile will enter the intestine and contaminates the feces. So removal of the gallbladder is what's going to rid the body of the salmonella. And that also eliminates the carrier state of it, okay? A pox news alert. This is talking about what? It is. Okay. Chicken pox is caused by the varicella zoster virus. Remember I said if you've had chicken pox, it will lie dormant and it could come back again as shingles. Yes. Okay, it's a vesicular pox that's accompanied by severe pruritus. What did I say pruritus was?
Like itchy.
Itchy. Okay. Severe itching because they've got all those lesions on them, okay? And they cause pock marks. So like they can scab, and then cause scarring. And that's hence the name, you know. Let's see here. It says explanations, or it says in England, children were often called chickens because chicken pox is primarily a disease of children. The pox was dubbed children pox. Others suggest that the name is derived from the appearance of the pock marks. It looks like the skin has been pecked by a chicken. Others observe the pox as resembling chickpeas. There's no telling what it means. And it says that in the book. It does say, as for the chief of grief, which in parentheses is, what are they talking about there? Syphilis. I'm at the right above the Do You Know box there on 76. As for the chief of grief, syphilis, its cause was accurately described by the ancients. It is taken when one pocky person doth sin in lechery with one another. Prevention is obvious. Sin thou not with a pocky person. If you could interpret that, they were sinning together. Remember how syphilis is spread?
Yes.
That's an STD. So don't sin with a pocky person. Okay. That's the end of chapter 5. Now we're opening to chapter 6, and we're going to look at the PowerPoint. I'm going to leave this, hopefully, that'll be where she can hear. All right, chapter 6 is talking about tissues and membranes. So we've gone past the cells, we've talked about some diseases and microbiology, and now we're going to look at the different kinds of tissue that you have in your body. And it's not showing up, so hang on just a minute. Let me pause this too. All right, so when we're talking about the different types of tissues, you want me to turn the light down, or can you see? No, never mind. I can't see my book.
I was like, if you want.
Okay, so tissues and membranes is the topic of chapter 6. Tissues are groups of cells that are similar to one another in structure and function. Histology is going to be the study of tissues. And then there's four major types: epithelial, connective, nervous, and muscular. Yes, when we do our little thing over here on the board and we're splitting things up, I also added membranes there, okay? How does cytology differ from histology? What do you think cytology is? Histology is the study of tissues. So cytology, what do you remember from med terms? Study of
masses, tumors. No, site is
what we just learned.
It's
Cells.
Okay, study of
cells. Cytology is the study of cells. Histology is the study of tissues. Okay? So different things that epithelial tissue functions, because we're going to go through, remember there was all different kinds?
Yes.
So now we're going to split them up and tell you what their functions are. So epithelial are for protection, absorption, filtration, secretion, and transportation. Epithelial tissue helps form the skin and lines most of the inner cavities, such as the mouth, the respiratory tract, and the reproductive tract. Epithelial tissues also transport substances. For example, epithelial tissues in the intestines absorb water and nutrients. From what does epithelial skin tissue protect? Sorry, what does epithelial skin tissue protect the body from?
Like outside sources, maybe.
Yes, and what could be some outside sources?
Like infection and stuff.
So pathogens.
Yes.
What else do you think the epithelial tissues protect us from? Sunlight and heat.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay. And cold. Traits of epithelial tissue. They form continuous sheets. It's giving you examples over here with some floor tiles showing you this is what epithelial tissue looks like. An example would be floor tiles to kind of keep it in your mind. The outer surface unattached, under surface attached to basement membrane. It's avascular. What does that mean?
Not vascular,
meaning no blood supply. Or no vessels right to it, okay? It's well nourished and regenerates quickly, okay? But not directly to it. It's avascular. The basement membrane, when it's saying under surface attached to the basement membrane, that is a thin membrane that anchors the epithelium to the underlying structure, okay? They also have very little intercellular matrix, okay? Moving on, types of epithelial tissue. So it looks like, don't you think that looks kind of like fish scales? Okay, looks like fish scales. Here's shapes of squamous, cuboidal, looks like a cube, and then columnar, looks like a column, okay? Squamous is gonna look like the fish scales, all right? It's classified according to its shape, those that we just mentioned. Layers of epithelial tissue. We're going to get through this pretty fast because tissue's fun. I'm not saying the other stuff, but I mean, we know our skin. It's easier to kind of grasp sometimes. Yeah. So layers of epithelial tissue. So they're classified according to the number of layers, whereas simple is going to be small, simple down here, and stratified is going to be more. Okay? Okay, so transitional epithelial changes from a simple layer to a stratified. An example would be the urinary bladder appears as simple epithelium, but when it's stretched, it's stratified epithelium. Okay? Sorry. It appears as simple epithelium when it's stretched. And stratified when it's unstretched.
Okay, that's what I was going to also say.
Yeah.
So it gets thicker as it gets bigger.
No.
Okay.
My bad. Sorry. All right. So when it is, again, about the urinary bladder, just to make sure we understand. When it's stretched, which one is it?
It's simple.
And when it's not stretched? When it's empty.
Stratified.
Okay. Location of epithelial tissues. So, again, like we said, mouth. And skin, and it says here that this is stratified squamous, respiratory is pseudo-stratified columnar. See how they, okay? The ovary surface is simple cuboidal. Air sacs in the lungs are going to be simple squamous. And then you've got the digestive tract is going to be the columnar again, and the bladder is going to be transitional because it stretches and doesn't stay the same. Okay, stretches when it fills up. All right, over on page 79 in chapter 6 is the types of epithelial tissue and all these simple squamous, cuboidal,
and things like that. Knowing which ones they go with, this picture helps, but the table also will show you, like, the columnar, it says is digestive tract, the pseudostratified, stratified is which one again? Which location is pseudostratified columnar?
Respiratory tract.
Lining of the respiratory tract and the lining of the reproductive tubes, like the fallopian tubes, okay? It also says on stratified squamous is what area? Where is that located?
Outer layer of the skin.
Okay.
The lining of mouth, esophagus, anus, and vagina.
Yes, and then transitional is again, because it's permitting expansion of the organ, okay? Glandular epithelial, we have here, it's showing you where the pores are, how they go all the way down to this exocrine glands here, and then we'll also discuss endocrine glands. So exocrine glands have ducts that carry the exocrine secretions outside the body. Exocrine, these ducts that carry it outside the body.
That just looks like a pimple to me. Like,
well, and we're getting into that kind of stuff. These excretions from an exocrine gland, I think it as exiting the body,
yeah,
okay, is going to be mucus, sweat, saliva, and digestive enzymes. Okay, those are going to be things that are in with the exocrine glands. I cannot speak this morning. Endocrine glands are ductless, and they secrete hormones such as insulin directly into the blood. Okay, so they're endocrine inside, not exiting the body. So that Do You Know box on 82, it says, what causes a pressure or a decubitus ulcer? So decubitus ulcer, pressure ulcer, same thing. They just interchangeable, okay? It's caused from pressure, and it's called a decubitus ulcer. So it can be referred to either way. So they call it a lying down ulcer. It says the ulcer is caused by an interruption of the blood supply to a tissue. If there's pressure on that and the blood can't get to that tissue to keep it oxygenated and keep it healthy, then it's going to cause a sore, okay? Let's see here. We're going on to lesson 6.2 objectives, which covers describing the functions of connective, muscle, and nervous. We talked about epithelial already. And then the types of epithelial and connective tissue membranes, and then differentiating between mucus and serous membranes. So functions of connective tissue. They connect. They support, protect, fat storage, and transportation.
Isn't transportation on the other one too?
It is, okay. Yes. Let's go back and make sure. Yep, there you go. And now we'll jump right back. Okay. Of the four types of tissue, connective tissue is the most abundant in the body. Connective tissue is the most abundant in the body, okay? It's distributed widely throughout the body. It's in your blood. It's under the skin. It's in the bone. And it's around many organs. Over here on 82, it starts talking about connective tissue right there for you. And then it goes into the different types of connective tissue. I don't want to jump ahead of our slides here. Characteristics of connective tissue. Has an intercellular matrix, so it's abundant, and it varies from liquid to hard. So it can be either way. Most is well vascularized. Remember the other one was avascular, epithelial. Exceptions to the vascularized, tendons, ligaments, and cartilage. Okay? Presence and amount of protein fibers vary. So collagen, elastin, and reticular fibers, which are fine collagen, those are gonna vary. So each type of cell secretes a different type of intercellular matrix, which may be liquid, gel, or solid, just like it says. Composed of fibrous protein and ground substance, intercellular matrix fills the spaces between the cells. It's intercellular, so it's in between the cells, okay? Proteins, fibers, like collagen and elastin, are present in different amounts. How did pregnancy and aging weaken connective tissue?
They stretch it out.
Yeah, so what would be a stretch that you would see on a pregnant or older person?
Stretch marks.
Stretch marks, yep, stretch marks on the abdomen. And saggy breasts, which they call Cooper's droop. Cooper's droop are going to be sagging breasts. Okay. All right. That's also mentioned over here in the book. Types of connective tissue. You're going to have loose. Loose connective tissue is going to be areolar, adipose, and reticular. You have dense fibrous connective tissue. Cartilage. Cartilage is going to be hyaline, fibrocartilage, and elastic. And then you got bone, blood, and lymph. Okay. Why are tendons, ligaments, capsules, and fascia composed of dense fibrous tissue and not areolar tissues? When I say dense fibrous tissue, what does that make you think of?
Like dense, like it's compacted.
Okay, so it does not make you think of this, which is areolar.
Yeah.
Okay. Because areolar tissue is more suitable for acting as tissue glue, dense fibrous tissue is stronger than areolar tissue. So right now, we are going to feel the cartilage that we're talking about in our body, which I know you know what cartilage feels like, but feel the cartilage rings in your windpipe, all the different rings, okay? The middle part of your nose, feel how those are hard, okay? And then the upper external ear. They're all different kinds, aren't they? And not all the same consistency, okay? Locations, we had our locations before with the epithelial, here's our connective. The dense fibrous is gonna be in ligaments. Okay, then you've got your bone, that's going to be hard, okay? Then you have cartilage in between. Then you've got reticular right here, and they've got it in the bone marrow. Adipose, fat, okay? And then your skin, you've got your loose connective areolar, the basement membrane. That just says copyright down there. I'm like, you're not missing anything on that. Blood and lymph are liquid. Areolar tissue is gel. Cartilage is semi-solid and bone is solid. So we go all the way from liquid to solid to separate those out, okay? Can you tell me about any personal injuries that you've had that involve a torn ligament? You work as a football trainer, so I'm sure you've seen some, but have you had any personally?
Torn ligament? I have never had a torn ligament.
Have you seen a torn ligament in your being a football trainer?
Honestly, no, I haven't seen anyone do that. I've seen broken bones, but I haven't seen like torn ligaments, so.
Okay. I wonder if Aubrey has. I'll just ask her and then she can just let us know. So, just wanted to see, you know, how did the injury happen? What did they do? How painful was it? How did they treat it? Okay. Neuroglia are cells that support and take care of the neurons. It's neuroglia, neurons, okay. And they're also just called glia, not just neuroglia. We are over here on page, I want to follow along in the book too. 82, it says, where is connective tissue found? We just showed you the different parts here. We talked about it has an abundance of an intracellular matrix. Bone and cartilage that are harder, they have few cells and large amounts of intracellular matrix. Intercellular, not intra, okay? Types of connective tissue. We looked at the different ones here on the slides. I just want to see if there's anything else. Loose connective tissue contains fibers that are loosely arranged around the cells. And then we talked about adipose tissue is what? Cells that store
fat. Yes.
Yes. Dense fibrous connective tissue. It's composed of fibroblast and an intercellular matrix that contains many collagen and elastin fibers. Tendons, when we were talking about if you've had anyone that's torn a ligament, well, let's talk about tendons and then we'll talk about what ligaments are. Tendons are cord-like structures that attach muscle to bone. So they are the ones that attach muscle to bone. Whereas ligaments cross joints and attach bones to each other.
Okay.
Ligaments help to join the bones, whereas the tendons are muscle to bone.
Muscle to bone.
Dense fibrous connective tissue also forms tough capsules around certain organs like the kidney and liver and forms sheets of tissue called fascia. So that tissue that's around that the liver and the kidney is going to be called fascia. Okay? All right, we'll flip over to nervous tissue now. The picture of that guy is on 84. The different types of connective tissue are also on 85 in this table. So when we were talking about the loose, the dense, the cartilage, bone, blood, and lymph, and their function are in this table here. Also, when it says cartilage and it says hyalin, what is hyalin? Where is it, I mean?
Hyalin, it's at the end of bones?
Huh, end of long bones, connects ribs to sternum, rings in the trachea like we were just feeling, the nose, and it's also the fetal skeleton.
So the fetus.
And the fetus, yeah, inside the mama. The fetal skeleton is hyaline cartilage. And this Do You Know box over here talks about that Cooper's droop. Breast tissue is anchored to the underlying structures by strands of connective tissue that's called suspensory ligaments or Cooper's ligaments, so that's why when they have sagging breasts, it's called Cooper's droop. Cartilage, we're going to go through that before we get to the nervous tissue over here since we're on that slide. Cartilage is formed by chondroblasts that eventually mature into chondrocytes, or also called cartilage cells. Remember, sites, site is going to be talking about cells. Okay? Do you see where we're at?
Yes.
Okay. Most cartilage is covered by perichondrium, which is a layer of connective tissue that carries blood vessels to the cartilage. Okay, so it's helping to supply it with blood. So on the chondroblast, and you're like, what is that? Chondroblasts secrete a protein containing intercellular matrix that becomes firm, smooth, and rubbery. Bone is also called osseous tissue. So if you see anything that says osseous tissue, we're talking about bone, okay? It secretes an intercellular matrix that includes collagen, calcium salts, and other minerals. Collagen is the mineral-containing matrix as a whole makes the bone tissue hard. This is what's making that collagen is making the bone tissue hard. Osteoblasts, again, it says it just like the other page, mature into osteocytes. I thought there was a picture that shows osteoblasts and osteocytes. Might be later. It's not. All right. Blood and lymph, in that section before we move on. Blood consists of blood cells that are surrounded by a fluid intercellular matrix called plasma. Remember I said intercellular means what? Around the cells, in between the cells, okay? So the intercellular matrix is called plasma. Nervous tissue now. This makes up the brain, spinal cord, and nerves. There's two types, neurons and neuroglia. So we've seen this guy before, and now we're looking at it a little bit more. This is the axon area of the nerve. Here's the cell body. Then you have your dendrites, or these little hair-looking things off the ends. And then the neuroglia. This is a picture of it right here. Now, neurons carry the electrical signals that allow for rapid communication through the body. Neuroglia are cells that support and take care of the neurons. They are also, like I said before, they're also called glia. This is a short slide for nerves, so let's look in the book. Short area there. You see that?
Yeah.
So the neuron has three parts. Just like I mentioned before, the dendrites, those on the ends, they receive the information from other neurons. And then the cell body contains the nucleus and is essential to the life of the cell. The axon transmits the information away from the cell body. So dendrites receive it. This transmits it away. Okay. Short and sweet.
And it only has to do with the brain and spinal cord?
Brain, spinal cord, and nerves. All nerves. And there's two types, neurons and neuroglia, or also called glia. Muscle tissue. These are composed of cells, fibers, that contract to cause movement of a body part. Three types, skeletal, smooth, and cardiac muscle. Smooth muscles, they move viscera and tubes like blood vessels and ureters. Cardiac muscle is only found in the heart. Makes sense? Yeah. So what does cardiac muscle do? What do you think the cardiac muscle does? Pumps the blood. Yeah. It's responsible for pumping action of the heart. The heart is a big muscle. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Locations of muscle tissue. Here is skeletal, and we see that it is going to be in the arms area here. Cardiac, obviously in the heart. And then smooth is going to be inside the body. So skeletal is going to be your arms, your legs. Smooth is inside here, muscles that we have. Skeletal muscle is elongated and appears striated. See how it looks long and skinny there?
Like a bunch of worms.
Huh?
Looks like a bunch of worms.
Like worms, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Cardiac muscle is long and striated, and it forms lateral connections with other cardiac muscle fibers. This allows for the electrical signal to spread very rapidly through the cardiac muscle. So there is electrical signal, which is the heart's normal pacemaker that sends a message so that the muscle in the heart knows when to contract. That's why when people's heart rates are really low and they might have to get a pacemaker installed, it's because their natural pacemaker is not doing its job, okay? For any kind of different reasons. Let's see, smooth muscle is non-striated. You see the smooth?
Yes.
Okay. Its shape, appearance, and function are distinctive from the other two types of muscle tissue. So, when I say striated, can you see it here? How these have the lines?
Yes.
And this one does too?
So
these do not.
Non-striated.
They're not. Smooth is not striated. Smooth muscle is also called visceral muscle. Remember what we said viscera meant? Organs.
Okay, yes.
Okay. So smooth muscle goes around those.
Okay.
The stomach, intestines, urinary bladder. Okay. You've got to have muscles there to be able to have those things work. Now, moving on, tissue repair. And we are over on page 88 now. We are just about done with this chapter already. And then we're going to play a little game. Or it's going to be a long game anyway. But you're going to separate everything out that I give you into epithelial, connective, muscle, nerve, and membranes. So you know which goes.
Okay.
And when you have a visual and you're writing it on the board, it will help you to remember it. Even though you're taking notes. Okay? So regeneration. Regeneration. What do you think that means without even looking at the definition?
You're
making a new one. It's regenerating. Like in cartoons when their arm comes off and they regenerate a new one. So replacement of tissue via mitosis is a different way to say it, a scientific way to say it. Fibrosis is replacement of injured tissue with fibrous connective tissue, scar tissue. When you get injured, the skin does heal over. It may not look the same, and it would be scar tissue, and then be fibrosis.
I was right here
because
I have a scar. That's why I was pointing.
Oh, you do? I was like, I don't see it.
That's why I was pointing.
Okay. Well, what happened?
When I was in kindergarten, I busted my head open on a table. I'm the reason things fell
asleep. It must have been a really big thing because kids, when they get injuries and it heals over, usually, depending on how young they are, you won't even see it when they're an adult.
Oh, it used to be a whole, like, this is good compared to what it used to be.
It used to be real big?
Yeah, it used to, not so much be like go big, but it like kind of stuck out, and whenever I'd get hot or mad, it like turned bright red.
Oh
yeah.
Dalton has one that's right about there too, and he had to have it glued from falling while I was getting my nails and he was in my lap, and he fell and hit his head on the corner of the table. Yeah, I know. He's good though. All right. Keloid scarring is when it's excessive fibrosis. Have you ever seen a keloid scar? They are raised scars.
Okay.
Some people might have them. You might.
Do some people, like, does hair grow on it sometimes? Like, extra hair?
No, that might be something different.
Okay.
This is scar tissue, and it's just a very, it's a huge knot. It's like too much fibrous tissue.
Okay?
It says skeletal muscle, cardiac muscle, and nervous tissue do not undergo mitosis. Okay, so skeletal, cardiac, and nervous tissue do not undergo mitosis and must be replaced by scar tissue, meaning you only get one thing, so you gotta take care of it. Yeah. Over here on, oh, we're still talking about tissue. We're not on membranes yet. We should be getting close though. Okay, steps in tissue repair. So when it's doing its repair, first you have a wound. Then it's going to clot and scab because it was bleeding. And then the tissue repair is going to begin. Scar tissue is going to start forming. Epithelial cells will start to multiply, and then the scab will detach. Okay? So when what happens when there's a deep wound?
A deep wound? Wouldn't it all be the same?
Except yes. It's just deeper.
Yeah.
So
it'll take longer to heal.
It would. It says when the epithelial cells multiply, they fill the area between the scar tissue and the scab. When the epithelium is complete, the scab detaches, just like I said. This is also described over on figure 6.8 on page 88. Let's see if I wanted to tell you anything else right here. I already said that skeletal, cardiac, and nervous do not undergo mitosis. And some persons will exhibit excessive fibrosis, which will mean that they will have those keloid scars. Not everyone. Okay, membranes. Types of membranes are mentioned in table 6.3 on page 89. You have epithelial and connective tissue membranes. So over here, they're thin sheets of tissue that cover surfaces, line body cavities, and surround organs. Okay? Classifications, like I said, epithelial and connective. You've got over here some epithelial membranes on this picture, on this guy right here. Do you see where the epithelial membranes are?
Yes.
You got mucus. Okay. Yes, all of these are considered epithelial membranes. Okay. You see the visceral pleura right here. So that's going to be around visceral organ pleura around the lungs. Okay, parietal pleura is another layer around the lungs, okay, is another outer. If you look, this line is around the lung, parietal is gonna be around that. So there's a space in between right there, okay? Cutaneous membrane skin, what types of functions does the skin perform? We talked about it before, but why do we have skin?
To protect.
To protect.
And cause a barrier from my pathogens and stuff getting in.
Okay. It excretes.
Sweating.
Yeah.
Sweating. And
which it helps with temperature regulation.
Yes.
And also touch and pain, sensory role. If the skin is blue or cyanotic, what does that mean?
It doesn't have
enough what?
Oxygen?
Yes. If there's not enough oxygen in the blood, your skin is going to turn, they call it cyanotic, which cyan means blue, okay? Now, yellow skin is going to suggest what?
Jaundice.
It is, but what's going on in the body?
Your liver. It's not damaged
at all. Okay, so bilirubin. You have too much bilirubin in the blood, okay? And that can, like you said, be a liver or a blood disease. Now, when patients are cyanotic, does that necessarily mean they're just going to look like this and just be blue? No. Now, sometimes they are. Sometimes it might be it's a discoloration and it's starting to look like a hint of it, maybe graying a little bit.
But they're not just going to be like straight blue.
They will. Some will. It just depends on the severity of it. Yes, it's scary. All right. Let's see. Mucous membranes. I might be jumping ahead here, but I'm going to say it anyway. We're going to go through it in the book here. On mucous membranes, they line all body cavities that open to the exterior of the body. So if it's a body cavity that opens to the exterior of the body, it is a mucous membrane. Mucous membranes secrete mucus, right? Serous membranes line the ventral body cavities that are not open to the exterior of the body. Ventral. Not open to the exterior, okay?
serous membranes secrete a thin, watery serous fluid. Makes sense, right? The part of the cavity that lines the walls of the cavity, like wallpaper, is the parietal layer. So that when I was talking about parietal right here, so parietal line is like wallpaper. It lines the walls of the cavity. Okay? Parietal pericardium, parietal pleura, the walls of the cavity. And then it says, if they cover the outside of the organ, so even closer in, the outside of the organ, not just the cavity, but the organ, then that is the visceral, the visceral layer. Okay? Does that make sense? Did I say clear enough? Okay. And the three serous membranes are going to be pleura, pericardium, and peritoneum. I've mentioned peritoneum many times. I swear my students are going to know a little bit more about dialysis than I learned in school. But it's peritoneal dialysis. So that peritoneal membrane is what I said they use as a filter to filter out the toxins. So remember that's over there in your belly. Okay. All right. Here's connective tissue membranes. Synovial, line joints. Periosteum, ost. Remember ost, bones. They line the bones. Perichondrium, that's more like cartilage. Okay, peri is meaning around.
See, I'm just like, my like midterms from last year kind of...
Midterms really help with
AMD. Like, I'm just seeing like the pictures. That
yeah, that's okay.
Like, that's what I
see. If that's what helps you remember. I always remember on like hepatitis, HEPAT, his liver. That's how I remember HEPAT is
for the
liver.
They gave us like the little
things to go with. And that was probably 20-something years ago when I learned that. So meninges lines central nervous system. Meningitis, when you're thinking of things like that, okay? Fascia, found throughout the body, okay? Then we have our mucous membranes here. They line all body cavities that open to the exterior of the body, just like I said. So here they are. Here's the ones. Respiratory, digestive, urinary, and reproductive. They all go to the outside of the body, okay? Mucous membranes are stratified squamous epithelium. And you would be able to see that it's shown here in the book too. Mucous membranes they enable absorption, secretion, and protection. And the mucus is secreted like a lubricant and to moisturize. Serous membranes line the ventral body cavities that do not open to the exterior. Serous, ventral body, do not open to the exterior. Okay? Pleura, parietal and visceral, pericardium, peritoneum. Peritoneum is parietal and visceral. There's two layers, okay? So, like I said, peritoneal dialysis, they have a tube to go in there. It does not normally open to the outside of the body. Okay, does that help a little bit? All right. We already said what parietal was, you know, that's just outlining the cavity, whereas visceral is lining the organ. Remember?
Yes. Okay. The parietal is like the wall.
Okay. So, let's see. Puncture wounds of the chest can upset the negative pressure within the intrapleural space, causing the lung to collapse. Why can a ruptured appendix result in peritonitis? Think of where the appendix is.
Yes.
If it ruptures, why does that result in peritonitis? Peritonitis, itis, inflammation of the peritoneum. Is it supposed to open and let fecal material go?
No.
Okay. Because fecal material will enter that pelvic cavity and then infection ensues, which is what I wouldn't normally say ensues, but anyway. That peritonitis will grow really fast. That bacteria grows so fast, you have to hurry up and get antibiotics to that patient. A lot of the times we would give prophylactic antibiotics if we thought that they had contaminated accidentally, like broke aseptic
technique. Like a really strong
vancomycin. We give really strong antibiotics, and we would give them, and that's just for peritoneal dialysis patients. That doesn't mean the person with a ruptured appendix. I mean, everybody has a peritoneum. So if it ruptures and goes in there, then it's an emergency. They need to hurry up and have it out. They need antibiotics. Okay? And going on. Whoops, we're done. All right, so I did want to point out in the book here, we've got to sum it up. Read all your boxes, and I know you probably do that. On the medical terminology and disorders, make, even though I'm not covering over that, that's just a review for you to be able to know these words. And it's showing, and it shows more details on some of this stuff, like, let's see, neoplasm. Maybe if you didn't understand what that was, you're going to break it down. You got neo and plasm. It's newly formed material, an abnormal proliferation of cells, the growth of being excessive and uncoordinated with surrounding cells. Down at the bottom, it says a secondary neoplasm refers to a cancerous tumor. Okay? That is the result of metastasis, and we talked about what metastasis was. It's spreading. Carcinomas and sarcomas are malignant tumors. So a carcinoma is a malignant tumor that arises from epithelial tissue. Okay? And a sarcoma is a malignant tumor that arises from connective tissue. Carcinoma, epithelial, sarcoma, connective. Okay? And let's see if there's anything else. Also, the summary outlines. Do you look at these at the end of the chapter? That's really good because it tells you the different types of tissue. Epithelial, connective, nervous, muscle, and then it goes through different descriptions. So remember us saying connective tissue has an abundant intercellular matrix that may be liquid. It can be liquid to hard. Okay. Types of cartilage, hyaline, elastic, and fibrocartilage. Make sure you're looking at your charts and stuff in here. I wanted to ask some questions, and I guess I'll go ahead and do it while I'm recording so she can have these questions too. I will ask you a question. It's multiple choice. I'm going to give you all the answers. I can repeat it. Just as a review. So which of the following is not descriptive of epithelial tissue? Hang on just a minute. All right, so these questions that are just a review over what we just went over for chapter 6, tissues and membranes, okay? Which of the following is not descriptive of epithelial tissue? Simple and stratified. B, contains a rich blood supply that nourishes the overlying connective tissue layers. C, squamous, cuboidal, and columnar, or D, all of the above?
It
is B. It does not contain a rich blood supply. Good job. See, you got this. Number 2, decubitus ulcers. A, occur only on the lower extremities. B, are caused by insufficient blood flow to the tissues. C, refer to infections of the skin, or D, all of the above are true. Decubitus ulcers. Decubitus ulcers, A, occur only on the lower extremities. B, are caused by insufficient blood flow to the tissues. C, refer to infections of the skin, or D, all of the above are true. Okay, what are decubitus ulcers?
Decubitus ulcers. I'm trying to think of the word decubitus.
They're pressure ulcers.
So it is the, okay.
Which one?
The one where it's lacking blood flow.
Yes, okay. They're caused by insufficient blood flow to the tissues. Okay. Decubitus ulcers is the same as pressure ulcers. You're just going to have to get that in your head. Yeah, yep.
Oh, like ulcer.
Because you'll, it's an ulcer.
Okay.
Number 3, which of the following is least descriptive of glandular tissue?
Okay.
A, forms endocrine and exocrine glands, so least descriptive. B, secretes hormones such as insulin. C, contains large amounts of collagen and elastin in its intercellular spaces. Or D, secretes milk, sweat, and digestive enzymes. Tissues that have glands.
Yes, so B.
Secretes hormones such as insulin.
Oh, no, because it's... Okay, sorry, read.
Okay. Which of the following is least descriptive of glandular tissue? A, forms endocrine and exocrine glands.
B, secretes hormones such as insulin. C, contains large amounts of collagen and elastin in its intercellular spaces. Or D, secretes milk, sweat, and digestive enzymes.
Least descriptive. And this is for
glandular tissue. Glands. Okay, so I'm going to tell you what it is. It is secretes milk, sweat, and digestive enzymes. If anything, even if you didn't know what glandular tissue was, think of it this way. Forms endocrine and exocrine glands. Okay, so that's both of them. Mm-hmm. So it's probably that because it's talking about both glands. Secretes hormones such as insulin inside the body. Contains large amounts of collagen and elastin in its intercellular spaces inside the body. And this is the only one that says secretes milk, sweat, and digestive enzymes. That's for outside the body.
Okay. Well,
so if anything, a process of elimination going, this would be both. These are both inside. That's the only one that's outside.
I don't know why I was thinking.
And you can only pick one answer.
I was thinking like glands, so that's what.
Oh, you were thinking of just outside.
Yes,
so
that's why. By glandular tissue. Okay.
That's okay. What is the similarity between bone, cartilage, adipose tissue, and blood?
They're all connected.
Go ahead.
They're connected tissue?
Yeah, all are classified as connected tissue. I didn't even have to give you all the answers. Good job. The pleura, pericardium, and peritoneum are A, restricted to the thoracic cavity, B, restricted to the mediastinum, C, serous membranes, or D, connective tissue membranes that bind the viscera to the walls of the cavities. Pleura, pericardium, and peritoneum.
So it's all the whole front.
Okay.
B.
Restricted to the mediastinum?
No, that's the heart. Then A.
Restricted to just the thoracic cavity? C, they're serous membranes.
Serous
membranes.
Okay. Okay. I was like, it's in the front.
And that was it on those questions. Here, let me see.